Today's scripture lesson is from Psalm 139, verses 1 through 6 and 13 through 18. You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. When I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book, before one of them came to be. How precious to me your thoughts are, God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. I felt very connected to this sacred story, Psalm 139, when I first read it. And while I don't embrace the idea of predestination and God's ultimate control or knowledge over things like if my favorite sports team is going to win their next game or where my next parking space will be, I do love the concept of a God that knows my story, of being important enough to be written in someone's book. Verses 13 and 14 hold my favorite lines. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. These words feel very personal to me and take me back about 18 years. My second pregnancy ended in a miscarriage. I was about 9 weeks along. It was early, which is a normal time for a miscarriage to occur, but hard nonetheless. I was lucky. About 3 months later, I was pregnant again. Pregnancy number 3 was chugging along at about 18 weeks, and we had literally just told family and friends that we were expecting, and I ended up in the emergency room. The doctors told me I was leaking amniotic fluid, and that was essentially my water had broken, and that I should expect to go into labor and miscarry. There was no way, of course, at 18 weeks that a baby could survive outside the womb. So they checked me into a hospital room and told me to wait to go into labor. 2 days later, I still had not gone into labor, and so they sent me home with strict instructions to not stand up for the rest of my pregnancy. Before I left the hospital, the doctor said to me, "What did you do for a living?" Yeah. He used the past tense. His point was that whatever my job was, it was going to be on hold, and it absolutely was. I was not in control of the story. While on bed rest, one of the things I started doing, I took up cross-stitching. This is not a particularly exciting activity, but it does take a lot of time, tiny stitch after tiny stitch, anything to pass the time. But in my mind, I visualized sewing up any tear in my amniotic sac with each of those tiny stitches. I was literally knitting my baby into my womb. Those words hit home for me. And it worked. Yesterday, the child in question turned 17. And she is constantly reminded of the 4 months of bed rest I was forced through. And we can often find a connection like this in our sacred stories. As my research for today continued, I was personally disheartened to learn that this exact phrase, my phrase as I called it, being knit in the womb, was used as a rallying cry by the anti-abortion movement. Like many Bible verses, Psalm 139 has been used to persuade towards a political position. Beginning in the 1970s when abortion was illegalized with the Roe v. Wade decision, the phrase, "You knit me together," was quoted on signs and repeated by protesters outside of abortion clinics. The Southern Baptist Convention titled its funding program for ultrasounds in pregnancy centers the Psalm 139 Project. Their thinking is that if a woman can literally see in the womb, see God's little project, they won't get an abortion. And some women do change their minds. Their slogan is, every mother, every child, every heartbeat matters to God. And while that sounds great, it's hard to reconcile with something like a miscarriage or repeatable preventable gun deaths. Those killed in war or famine, did those heartbeats not matter enough? What part of those short lives and early deaths were already knit into someone's story? God may well know when and how our personal story will end, but we don't have that insight. And are we in control or just living out some script or caught somewhere in between in the middle ground of those options? It is the ultimate step in humility, I believe, to acknowledge that we are not in the driver's seat of our lives. Our stories are affected by our beliefs, our choices, those with whom we surround ourselves, not to mention the weight of all those same choices our ancestors made. For those of you who were here to hear Brooke Longoria's personal faith journey, she talked about the importance of her great-grandparents and where she is today in her faith, people who died before she was even born. That leads right up to the way our parents decide to raise us and the way we decide to raise our own children. To be fearfully and wonderfully made does sound more exciting than my life feels most of the time. It really makes me pause and wonder if I'm just not quite living up to my potential, the expectations that God has of me. We are burdened with this idea of potential, aren't we? We have these looming questions. What do we want our life's work to be? Who we should or shouldn't partner with? Are we successful? Are we happy? Do we have enough friends? There's so much yet to accomplish. It's a wonder we get anything done thinking about it. And anyone who has brought a new child into their home can certainly understand the combination of those words, fearful and wonderful, although I think terrifying and sometimes okay is a more apt description. The newborn babies haven't done anything of their own merit in the world except exist, and yet we know how amazing they are. And it's not just because of what they might do someday. We should give ourselves a break on that burden of expectation, too. Who you are right now, not yesterday, not tomorrow, not in 10 years when you have finally answered all those looming questions, but right now, you are okay. You are valuable and valued in the world. I used to tell my kids that the only important to do in life was to be a positive force on the planet, and what that looked like really didn't matter. One theologian is quoted as saying about Psalm 139 that it acts as a foil to the modern obsession with the privacy and the individual. And I understood this. It does have a creepy voyeur factor. Verses 3 through 5. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hands upon me. Slow down, God. It's getting a little awkward. We don't want anyone to have that much control. We want to be master of our fate, keeper of our story. I was having a conversation with Emma of the bed rest. She was about 10 at the time. I'm not even sure what we were talking about. And she stopped at one point and emphatically proclaimed, "You don't know my life story." And I replied, "I literally actually do know your life story." But I really understand that desire to not have someone know everything about you. And despite all the facts I have about my children, who I have literally known from their first day, I know that I don't know their life story. But it is a handy phrase to pull out when you're arguing with someone, and you can just say, "Oh, you don't know my life story." It works. Try it. Over the past two Sundays, we have celebrated our graduates. And a lot of things we like to ask them are, "Where are you going to school? What are you going to do next? What will you major in? What do you want to do after you graduate?" These are wonderful and fearful questions. and intimidating to answer. What if your plans don't work out or get drastically altered? Then you're going to have to answer a whole nother barrage of inquiries about why you aren't doing what you told them you were going to be doing. If that happens, just say, God shifted my story. When I was 17, I wanted more than anything in the world to be a private detective. Mm-hmm. I was possibly allowed to watch too much Remington Steele as a kid. And I told my mother and anyone who would listen that I would be applying to the John Jay School of Criminal Justice in New York City. They didn't have a PI program, but, you know, who needs a plan? So my wonderfully supportive mother replied, no. And that was possibly the best bad news I'd ever received in my life. So I shifted my story. And I kept shifting it. Even less than a year ago, if someone told me I was going to be up here doing this proclaiming thing, I simply would have said no and walked away. Our stories are important, living them, telling them, changing them, but most importantly, knowing that each story in and of itself is valuable. Regardless of how much God has preordained or just knows or has no clue about, it's up to us to tell it. Sharing who we are connects us and helps us grow. We don't have an outline for our lives that doesn't involve other people. My favorite movie is The Book of Life. You may have seen this. If you know me for more than 5 minutes, you know I love this movie. In that movie, there is a physical book, which each individual story is written in this book. But your story only exists as long as you are remembered.
And when the last memory of you fades, the pages of your story go blank. All the more reason to tell it now and loudly. The story of Psalm 139 has shifted with history, too. Beginning in the 1990s, gay and lesbian activists started using this sacred text to bolster their own sense of self within the Christian context. I too, they said, am fearfully and wonderfully made. This is how God knitted me. Who I am and how I am right now is good and valued. You do own your own story, and it's your decision whether or not to share it. I would encourage you to tell it. We want to know it. The fearful parts and the wonderful parts. We want to know you. We want to connect with you. Because it is only through each other and that connection that we know God. Amen.